Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Title 42 restrictions on the U.S.-Mexico border end tonight. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
Starting at midnight, people who arrive at our southern border will be subject to our immigration enforcement authorities under Title 8 of the United States Code.
Reporter Chris Fox says Texas communities have been preparing for a flood of migrants.
Two counties in the Rio Grande Valley, Hidalgo and Cameron, issued disaster declarations saying migrants unlawfully crossing the Texas-Mexico border posed an ongoing and imminent threat of disaster. Brownsville, Texas, and Cameron County has seen about 2,000 arriving daily so far this week. Some good news in El Paso, Texas, it saw a big drop in the numbers of migrants sleeping on the streets last night. Mayor Oscar Leeser.
And the numbers are down because Customs and Border Patrol and ICE and everybody teamed up to help the asylum seekers register and continue to move on.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
House Republicans approve a bill that places new restrictions on asylum seekers and funds the construction of more of the U.S.-Mexico border wall.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said Republicans acted because President Biden did not.
The White House has 2 years to plan for the end of Title 42. We all knew the deadline. But the White House produced no plan, missed the deadline, and bumbled into another crisis.
The bill passed 219 to 213 with all present Democrats and two Republicans voting against it. It has almost no chance of making it through the Democratic-controlled Senate, and the president has already said he would veto it if it did. Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
Tomorrow's meeting between President Biden and congressional leaders has been pushed to next week as staff continues working on the debt bill. The Manhattan District Attorney says a U.S. Marine veteran will be arraigned tomorrow on second-degree manslaughter charges in the chokehold death of a homeless man on a New York City subway train. This protester on hearing the news.
I'm very to hear that. I mean, I think it should have happened sooner, but I'm glad to know that there will be some accountability.
A clinical trial involving 16 people whose tumor was removed from the pancreas has found that a targeted vaccine may have kept the cancer from returning in half of them. Dr. Anirban Mitra with the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Texas.
The signals look really promising, and I'm enthused about what they have been able to deliver in this case.
Police in Philadelphia are still searching for two inmates who escaped from a prison last weekend by cutting a hole in a fence. This resident can't believe
it. It's just strange what's going on in this world. It's just unsafe.
One woman has been charged with hindering apprehension. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Zocalo Food Truck Park is so much fun. They have such variety in one place. You name it. Ice cream, bagels, sushi, tacos, pizza, to tasty sandwiches, and a fun full bar to boot with some craft cocktails and beers. You can even host a private party or reserve a heated hut. Support local food entrepreneurs with family and friends and Taste Milwaukee. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Find us at ZocaloMKE.com. That's ZocaloMKE.com.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come pick it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us. Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
is that it's all about me, and it's not about we. And look, you're right. The 1950s, we did have divisions. But even in those communities, there was a sense of we. I mean, one of the things we learned about when we did our civil rights tour is, we were down in Jackson, Mississippi, where they had a Black Wall Street, where there was tons of Black-owned businesses. There was tons of community. There were things that people were brought together and were fighting together to make better lives. And somehow we screwed that up, too.
Yeah, we certainly did. The first use of aerial bombardment was the white people destroying the Black neighborhoods in Tulsa, Oklahoma, around 100 years ago. I'm hoping that we don't go back, that these, white supremacists who are talking about replacement theory realize that they're actually better off with a diverse society, with everyone participating, with lots of customers who can buy stuff and participate in the economy.
Now, what's interesting to me, Morris, is I watched the town hall thing last night with Trump, and one of the things that my Trump supporter friends have always told me about him, he's a businessman. He's a businessman first. He's a great businessman. That's what they tell me. Whether it's true or not, we can debate that for days. But he came out yesterday and said that he wants to see the country default, which, you're a business person. Does that make any business sense whatsoever? Would any business person in this country go, yeah, that would be good for business?
I cannot think of any possible reason. Maybe if you're a Russian oligarch or a Chinese oligarch or something, you might be better off if the United States really, if the United States economy is really destroyed. I can't think of any other class of people in the world who would actually prefer that.
Do you agree
it's
with?
It's just a sad thing.
No, it's insane to me. But do you agree with Moody's Analytics and their assessment that we could lose 7 million jobs and unemployment rate be over 8%? Could it be that bad?
It could. I was on a webinar with Mark Zandi. We were our Zoom boxes were next to each other. We're actually in different places, but just the other day, if the borrowing authority is not increased, then the government will run out of money, whether it's, 4 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now, whatever. But it will happen. They'll run out of money. And I think there's a couple of possibilities. One is the president of the United States, President Biden, could declare that he was ordered by law to spend this money, and he's going to spend the money and have them print dollars or make coins or something. Technically, the debt limit only applies to paper money, not coins. So they can do that. They could do, a few other crazy things to just sort of say that the whole debt limit thing is a moot point. I don't know if he wants to. I don't think he wants to, but he'd prefer having that limit extended, but he could do that. And then if they don't do that, they'll run out of money. It'll be like, if you don't have any money in your checking account, you can't buy any more stuff. Tax revenue comes in, but it's only, half, two-thirds of what they were ordered by law to spend, by the laws that Congress has passed for this year's budget. So they're going to have to spend less stuff. And it'll start with places with lots of government workers not getting paid. They can still work. The government still has authority to pay them. It just doesn't have any money.
Right.
It won't have any money at that particular moment. So it'll start with... And all of a sudden, guys who own bars in front of military bases won't have any business because no one will have any beer money. Pretty soon, it'll hit hospitals. The actual hospital workers won't be making their rent. Their landlords won't have any money. They won't be making their car payments. The car dealers won't be selling any cars. And it'll expand through the whole economy in the course of a month or two. If all of a sudden the government stops paying literally millions of people and millions of contractors and lots of people get laid off, it'll be an expanding recession depression within, a couple of months, I guess.
So, but what do you say to the person, Morris, who goes, well, you know, you just said yourself, we don't have the money. The money's not coming in. We're spending more than we have. We shouldn't do that. And this is the way that we're going to stop doing this. What do you say to that argument?
Well, the fact is, the things that we call money, these dollar bills that we have in our pockets that we pay for stuff with, the government creates more of them from time to time. And some of them are these dollar bills we carry around, and some of them are these things called T-bills that they issue that are promises for more dollar bills. And when you're dealing with someone who is allowed to print their own money, the U.S. government and the Fed, a promise to give you money is the same thing as actual money, because all money is just a promise of something. The dollar bills aren't really worth anything in themselves,
right?
Just the paper. They're a promise that you can use them to buy stuff. And so are the bills and the notes and the bonds and all these other things the government creates. So essentially what the government is doing every year, it's taking in a bunch of money with taxes and it's sending out more money. Essentially, it's creating more money. The total number of dollars in existence is going up. It's been going up every year almost for, you know, 100 years or so. And essentially, that's what they're saying they don't like. They don't like the fact that the number of dollars in existence is increasing. But it has to increase. We have more people. We do more stuff. People want raises. So the total amount of money in the money supply has to go up every year. That's why we went off the gold standard years ago. That's why Democrats from William Jennings Bryan on have been arguing that we need a flexible currency and not a gold standard or something like that with a fixed amount of dollars.
Let me ask you about that, because I get a lot of my conservative friends who want to go back to the gold standard. They have, I know someone, you know, told them something that this might be better. What would happen if we were on the gold standard? Would it harm our growth? Would we not be able to expand our economy? Would it mean less?
It would mean not having any growth unless people found more gold mines. And I would prefer having government officials who report to our elected, you know, the people we elect by voting, deciding on monetary policy, not gold miners. Essentially, it would mean we put gold miners in charge of making monetary policy, and yeah, there'd be no growth. You know, there was a time when we were on the gold standard when farmers who were having very profitable farming operations could not borrow money because their banks didn't have any gold, even though they were growing crops and stuff they could sell. But if you don't have any gold, you can't buy anything. And the amount of gold was fixed. As we were having more, as the country was expanding, there wasn't enough gold to buy stuff, even though we had more stuff. So it essentially made deflation in gold. And that's not what we want. We don't want to run out of money, even when we have stuff to sell. And even when people have jobs where they can earn money, but there's no one has any. That's not good. That's what causes recessions and depressions. And that's why we went off the gold standard, and so is every other civilized country in the world, you know, many years ago. I don't want to put gold miners in charge of our official monetary policy. I don't think that would work well at all.
No, I'm with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where Morris Pearl. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org. It's the website if you want to check out the work that they do. Now, I've had people tell me that they believe the U.S. economy is like a business, but it's a Ponzi scheme now, and no serious investor would invest in the U.S. I've had people tell me this because our debt-to-GDP ratio is so high. You're actually an investor. You're someone who does this. Does that argument hold any water with you?
Well, I spend U.S. dollars. You know, I live in my, you know, my apartment here. I have to pay our maintenance fees. They used to pay the doorman and stuff in U.S. dollars. So I need U.S. dollars. That's what I use when I buy stuff. And it's not a Ponzi scheme because the government is allowed to create U.S. dollars. So they're not going to run out. And it's kind of like the argument, it'd be kind of like arguing that, you know, American Airlines can't issue any more frequent flyer points because they're going to run out. They're not going to run out of frequent flyer points. They might run out of seats on the planes, so they'll have to stop eventually, but they're not going to run out of points, the actual numbers they put in your accounts.
Well, they need to get more plans. I mean, so that's the other part of this for me.
And the government has to get more taxpayers, but they do. Our economy, our population is expanding. Every year we have more people with jobs. Every year we have more people making stuff and doing stuff. And factories are making more cars. Farmers are growing more stuff. People are working more hours because there's more people. So the government is, by making that analogy, getting more airplanes and more seats and stuff. And they have to expand the number of dollars. The same way the airline, if they get more airplanes and more customers and more everything, they need more points. It's the same idea.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because we're trained to believe that the government operates just like we operate in our homes at the kitchen table. If we don't have enough money coming in, we can't spend it. You're arguing that that's not reality. That's not how the economy works. Because some people say, look, you know, we should balance our budgets. We shouldn't spend as much. I argue we should raise taxes and bring more revenue in. Is there a way forward in this, given how we've been kind of trained like Pavlovian dogs to see debt and foam?
I think you've been trained a little bit wrong, but it's hard to say that because it's true for almost everybody else. It's true for your state governments. They can't spend more money than they take in. It's true for your brother-in-law. He can't spend more money than he makes a living. But it's not true for people who print their own money. And fortunately, the United States has never defaulted, and people all over the world have trust in U.S. dollars. You know, there's more U.S. currency outside the United States and inside the United States, and most of it's $100 bills, because that's how people want to store their cash all over the world, because they have faith in the U.S. and the U.S. currency. So we do not want that to be destroyed. We do not want to lose that special privilege we have as Americans. And I'm hoping that the government find some way forward to solve this crisis and we don't lose that special privilege.
No, and this is exactly why I think that there should be no debt ceiling whatsoever. This should be done away with. If we want to talk about spending, we talk about it before we spend it. This idea of an artificial cap that we're going to hold each other hostage over every couple of months or every couple of years is insane. And not just us, but hold the world hostage over is just insane to me. But more
so, I told you before, it's like if your wife gave you a budget to go shopping and then a month later said she's going to refuse to pay the credit card bill because she wants to pressure you into doing something else next year. It's that ridiculous.
It is that ridiculous. Morris, I appreciate the time. Love having you on. Hope folks will check out the website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Thanks so much, buddy.
Great, Rick. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, you know, I come back to this. It's silly that we have this artificial cap that used to be a yawn vote. They used to come in and vote because they already spent the money. It's simple. Back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've been watching the Republican presidential field. This Vivek Ramaswamy guy. He's a character. You got to give him credit. Entrepreneur, wealthy guy. He's got a solution for everything, and his solution for Republicans to win an election is get young people to not be able to vote. Evidently, Vivek wants to change the 26th Amendment so that 18 to 25-year-olds don't get the vote. Well, they'll get to vote if they join the military or do some kind of, you know, community service for 6 months. You know, then they can do it. Or my favorite one, and this you got to pass the immigration test. You got to pass the same civics test that immigrants have to pass to become a naturalized citizen. And at age 25, miraculously at 25, then you'd be able to have the right to vote. Because somehow, I guess, between 18 and 24 and 363 days, you can not know anything. And on that magic day that you become 25, you are now a well-rounded citizen, which is nuts. It's not going to happen because you need 2/3 of Congress to amend the Constitution. Not going to happen. But it is interesting that you've got people who are trying to, well, do what they can to stop people from voting. And this is one of them. Again, my mind went back to this place of, it went back to this place of the old literacy tests of the good old days, or not good old days, that the reason we were able to stop certain communities, black people, from voting was by having these idiotic literacy tests that no one could pass. You know, how many jelly beans are in this jar kind of stuff. And, you know, this kind of stuff is, well, it just gets to the heart of a lot of that kind of craziness. But, you know, it is what it is. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing today?
Oh, totally insane, as usual.
What I expect.
But, you know, apparently, since the Republicans are crazy, you know, why not?
I'm with you. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that I think all of the Republican candidates have totally lost their mind. And it's like a big contest to see who's the craziest.
Well, you know, who can out-Trump Trump seems to be the game. And there's let's you in on the secret. No one is going to out-Trump Trump.
That's true. He's had decades of being insane. But, yeah, I've been shaking my head, you know, especially over. You notice they're always wanting to change the Constitution so they can favor themselves, you know, their beliefs or whatnot. It's just, you just shake your head and go, patriotic, huh? Yeah, okay. But have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, what they are is they're original intenters. They believe in the original intent. Which meant that, you know, blacks were in the fields, gays in the closet, women in the kitchen making pie, of which my wife made me a wonderful lemon meringue pie, which was fabulous, by the way, for my birthday, and thank you for that. But, you know, they want to go back to that original intent, where only white landowning males over 21 can vote, and nobody else. And, you know, they're against all of the changes that have happened over these 200 and some odd years of progress. Again, these are people who, they're not going to tell you this out loud anymore. Antonin Scalia was one of the biggest champions of the whole original intent idea, but the Federalist Society is, you know, truly in that camp. But this voting thing, this is real. Republicans are doing everything they can do to stop young people from voting because they know that their policies, young people are not on board with. And they've motivated young people over Roe, over they're being saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt that past generations didn't have. They're concerned about there maybe not being a future for them. So these younger voters are motivated to be politically active. So you've got folks like Ramaswamy who are going, nope, we don't want them voting. This is basically calling them stupid. just to cut to the chase. This kind of a statement is calling all young people under 25 stupid. And I would argue, oh, I would love to take the immigration test to a Trump rally. Maybe we should do that at some point. I'd love to see how many of them don't know how many members of Congress there are. I'd love that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the first day of the Pullman strike. The strike started in the company town of Pullman, on the south side of Chicago, where workers made luxury sleeping cars for passenger trains. As a depression swept the nation, workers had seen their wages slashed. But rents owed to the company owner George Pullman stayed the same. The strike won support from the American Railway Union and its leader, Eugene V. Debs. The American Railway Union called for a boycott of all Pullman cars, and more than a quarter of a million railway workers participated in the work action against Pullman. The strike was crushed by legal injunctions and with federal troops. In a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, Eugene V. Debs was imprisoned for his support of the boycott. One prominent supporter of the strike was Chicago area Reverend William H. Cardewine. The Reverend supported the strikers from his pulpit. After the strike, his book, The Pullman Strike, helped spread the word of Pullman. In it, he warned, "We as a nation are dividing ourselves, like ancient Rome, into two classes, the rich and the poor, the oppressor and the oppressed. On the side of the oppressor, there is power and protection, class legislation, and military support. We are following in the tracks of ancient Rome," he wrote, "instead of learning lessons from her failures and defeats. No country can prosper, no government long perpetuate itself and its institutions, which does not administer judgment and justice alike to all its people." These words from Reverend Cardewine seem more relevant than ever today. Will we heed his warning?
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Tiptoeing around the democratic process, Indiana's Republican legislature has become the latest of that ilk to slap its local school librarians with an idiotic book ban. Snuck into law behind closed doors, the partisan Hoosier law requires librarians to pull books that the learned lawmakers consider, quote, harmful to minors. Just to juice up the ignorance and arrogance of their ban, the law criminalizes failure to comply by punishing librarians with up to 2.5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. What constitutes harmful to minors? Indiana's priggish politicians declared nudity, sexual references, and offensive content to community standards to be violations. Obviously, then, books commanding that rape victims marry their rapists, as well as celebrating daughters who seduce their father to bear his children, plus endorsement of bestiality, copulation in church, women boiling their children for food, and so god-awful much more, have to be ripped from the shelves and burned. Only, all of this is enshrined in the Bible, which is urged on Indiana's youngsters in Sunday schools, conveniently placed in the bedstands of every chain hotel and cited by pious lawmakers as their moral compass. The so-called good book is replete with the gross and explicit sexual material that Republican book censors call harmful. Indeed, a feisty civil libertarian organization named Freedom From Religion Foundation gives away book labels you can stick in Bibles, warning that, quote, literal belief in this book may endanger your health and life. This is Jim Hightower saying, the books that right-wing autocrats want to ban are not pornographic. They just explore ideas that those politicians don't like, ideas that young people are already grappling with. And by the way, why not require these pious lawmakers to disclose what licentious material they've been reading before they dictate what we read?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I love the fact that this is great. Evidently, House Republicans passed a bill to clamp down on unemployment insurance fraud. And you can't make this up. One of the Bills' sponsors is New York Republican Representative George Santos, who has been indicted for unemployment insurance fraud. So he literally voted for the bill to crack down on what he's accused of doing. Now, what's interesting is there are some legal experts that said this guy could spend 20 years in jail. And here to share some thoughts on and has some experience with not unemployment insurance fraud, but other legal troubles in Congress. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So this seems kind of brazen. I mean, you know, he voted for the bill that it's symbolic. It's not going anywhere. But he literally voted for the bill that would go after him.
Look, he doesn't care. They don't want him there. Mitt Romney is the guy that's been, you know, from day one saying, you know, he shouldn't be there. Of course, you can't, I tell people this, you can't throw them out because, you know, they're idiots or they're doing this or they're doing that until, you know, there's a legal process there. But Romney from day one, the famous thing, Romney, got to give him credit. He walked down the aisle and he's like, I'm not getting in a picture with you. You know, I know what you're doing. This is what's really weird, too. Look, when I got in trouble, I must say, I was treated very decently, including by Nancy Pelosi, you know, and Steny Hoyer, the two leaders at the time. And for the most part, and it's not that you expect you'd be treated decently, but I had, you know, developed some friendships, right, over the years. Right. So Santos comes in on fire, brazen. And I talked with friends up on the Hill. They said he was one of those guys from day one, is like walking down the hall, almost shoving people, you know, aside. Didn't care. Was lying to everybody every day. And now, I mean, he's facing some serious stuff. You know, I have a form that was in a congressional form that was not correct. This guy's facing some real serious stuff. Interstate wire fraud, you know, on and on and on. And but here's the thing. He doesn't have to resign. And you can notice how members are starting to come out saying you ought to go. But what do you hear from McCarthy? You know? McCarthy doesn't have votes to spare.
Yeah, no. That's it's amazing to me. But I was reading one thing that I said he could spend 20 years in jail.
Well, yeah. I did a plea deal of 18 months with the government. Because I was never indicted. I wasn't arrested. This was all a plea process with the government and I back and forth. Because, you know, the last thing they wanted was a trial, and in certain cases they don't like trials. So I did a plea deal of 18 months. The judge gave me 30. She thought, you know, 30 months looked better. So he could even do a plea deal, and depending on the judge, he could, you know, he could get more. So he could do a plea deal for 5 or 6 years and maybe get 10. But wow. The charges he's facing, I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to face those charges in federal court. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, seven counts of wire fraud, 3 counts of money laundering, 1 count of theft of public funds, and 2 counts of making materially false statements to the House of Representatives. Which is the worst of those? Wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, or lying to Congress?
Well, everybody, including Congress, lies.
Okay. So we can say that's not a big deal.
Let's throw that one out, you know. But I always said, you lie trying to stay out of jail. You tell the truth when you come out, you know, from jail. So, but I think the money laundering, and especially the wire fraud, and then anything that's near obstruction of justice, I mean, at a personal level here, I didn't have any of that. If I'd have had that, I would have been, I don't know, losing my mind. This guy's got some real serious things that the government, and by the way, this is something else to note. When the government's doing the back and forth plea deal with you and your attorney's right, and they might be able to convict you, they might not. I don't know. It's a back and forth thing. They feel they've got enough to get you, right? When they arrest you like they did him, you're pretty well guaranteed they've got a pretty decent case.
No,
so, and
And the fact that, the fact that he's out on $500,000 bond. I mean, I'm going, a sitting member of Congress has to put up a $500,000.
Wow. Right. They must consider him a, now he had, and I can't, who can follow this guy? I mean, but he had some connections to what was it, Brazil or something like that. So maybe they figure, you know, oh, one other thing, if you want to hear a good one, this is kind of funny. After I pled guilty, I went down the hall in D.C., and they said, okay, give me your passport, you know. And I handed them the standard blue passport, right? And this is kind of, this was funny. Actually, my lawyers didn't think it was funny, but I did. I laughed. And I looked at the guy from the Justice Department. I said, you want my other one? And he went, what other one? I said, this one. And I pulled out the brown passport. Members of Congress can get three passports. They can get a blue one. The citizens have that. They can get a brown one, an official, and they can get a black one, a diplomat. And the Justice Department didn't even know that, Rick.
Wow.
I said, you want the second passport? I could literally have boarded a plane that day with that passport.
Yeah, but would you
and left the U.S.? Oh, no, my goodness. You know,
I mean,
no,
that's
no
the thing.
Way,
I mean, would you have? Probably not.
No, I've got kids and grandkids. With Santos?
I think
probably.
So. Oh, yeah.
So I wonder. Now, I hope they're listening to your show because he surrendered his blue passport. I wonder if somebody said, do you have a brown passport, the black one? Let's see.
Yeah, I think no.
If tomorrow morning, all of a sudden, he's on a plane to Brazil, then we can blame them for not listening to the Rick Smith show.
There you go. But I got to think no, because I don't think he's been there long enough to get the black one at least, because that's a diplomat's one, right? You got to go through some hoops, right? Or no?
Oh, they expedite for members.
Okay. All right. Well.
Yep.
I'm sure. I'm sure he's got all
having
three
the having the black one is not good because there are certain countries diplomats don't have a relationship. If you have the brown one, you could even go to Cuba with the brown one.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yep.
There's some little tidbits for you from the Congress.
But here's the thing: I'd be happy to see him go. Let him go. Let him go. Let him go live in a hut somewhere.
As far as passports, I had mine pickpocketed one time, and I actually went to the embassy, and they actually let me. I shouldn't be telling all this, probably, but they let me push the button that actually made my new passport, and that was done in a day. So
yeah,
he might have a brown one.
Was that before 9/11 or after?
That was before. But they do expedite everything for members, though.
Yeah, but you know,
so he literally could have a brown one.
Well, maybe we should be looking into that.
Yeah,
you're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Did you happen to see the big CNN, the circus there on CNN? Did you happen to catch that in India?
Right. I watched it, and I also looked at CNN's clips yesterday in my news notes I sent out, and I looked at Fox's. Now, it was interesting. Fox does a story about how Trump attacked the moderator, right? That was Fox's story. Then, of course, CNN did a story about, you know, the whole thing and Trump denying the election, et cetera. I thought that the moderator handled herself quite well. I don't think that you can say that she, you know, softballed the thing. But let's face something. Look, in the end of the day with this, CNN made some money off of it, right?
That's it.
You know? And they made some money off of it. Trump's never been on CNN. And what's that tell you about Trump? Since he was elected president, he's never been on CNN. So what's that tell you about him?
He knows
And he knows he needs to reach out anywhere. And that's what he did. He reached out anywhere. But CNN made some money off of it, and I know AOC was, you know, angry at CNN, and some others were. But it's a corporate decision. Nobody should be real shocked. You know, it's a corporate decision.
I've got friends who are like, I can't believe they did that. I go, I can. It's about the money.
I can.
Listen to Rupert Murdoch. Rupert will set you straight. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. That's all it's about.
That's true. That's what it was. I mean, it didn't hurt Trump to do it.
I think it did. I think it's going to hurt him a little bit. I think he took some positions that are going to come back to bite him. I mean, the whole let the country default, the whole Putin is not a war criminal. Yeah, I think some of those things are going to be attack ads come very soon.
But see, he would have done that anyway. True. He does these things, so he might as well get all this, you know, exposure. And what amazes me still, I don't know. I watched it. I'm still amazed at the poll numbers. I think they're going to at some point decrease. And of course, you know what I hold to, that he won't go to the convention as a nominee, but that's just me. I think eventually these numbers get soft enough, but I don't know. I'm just baffled how he's still walking.
It's amazing to me, but the one thing that I grabbed onto is he said that he's responsible for Roe versus Wade being overturned. I argue he threw the justices under the bus because I believed, and I believed at the time, and I still believe, that he was given assurances that they would overturn it, that everybody knew that those three appointees were going to overturn it, and they went to Congress and they lied during their confirmation, knowing that they were going to overturn it.
Right. Right. I mean, there were a lot of Republicans that didn't want it overturned. Eventually, even if they say they wanted it overturned, they didn't. And then now, the problem, if I was back in Congress, the problem I would have is now the litmus test is, you know, are you for rape, incest, life of the mother? And all of a sudden, if you're for what we call the Hyde Amendment, Henry Hyde,
right,
of Illinois, all of a sudden, if you're for that, which used to be, if you were right to life, you could be for that amendment. Oh, some people would grumble. Now, because of Roe v. Wade overturned, now if you are for that, wow, you're an abortionist. You know, you want abortions rampant. I mean, boy, did the litmus test change.
No, everything's gotten crazy and much more extreme. I look at Alabama, you know, now saying they're going to start charging women with murder if they have an abortion. You knew it was going to come here, and it's coming a lot faster than I thought it was going to happen.
Right, that's true.
Interesting times we live in. I got to get your thoughts on the immigration thing. We've talked about immigration, you know, for years now. I guess, you know, midnight. This Title 42, I guess it is, goes away. What's that going to mean?
Well, you know, the GOP's got a border bill. They're going to get some Democrat votes on it, I assume. But both sides of the aisle are worried about this expiration of 42. And that allowed, of course, 42 allowed for the swift expulsion of migrants during the COVID pandemic. And we all know that it's been declared, you know, not now. So maybe no Democrats will actually vote for the bill, but they might be kind of sitting there quietly going, okay, all right, because the Republicans are trying to do a I don't know if they got past the first hurdle, but I think they did. And so they want to address, you know, about, well, different things in the bill, foreign terror language, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the Title 42, I think that, you know, the bill still has a whole process through the Senate. So the actual resolvement and what happens is going to happen at the border. It's going to happen through the executive, through the White House.
Right. Now, the House did pass a border security bill. The president has vowed to veto it. As I said from the beginning, nothing's going to come of this because, one, it's too big of an issue to beat the other side up with. The extremes will never allow, you know, something to happen. Mm-hmm. And if something does happen, everybody's going to be angry about it, which is why, again, nothing is going to happen. And we're going to end up in this situation of chaos at the border.
Yeah, and I misspoke now. It's not going to probably have a Senate vote, though.
No, it's not.
It won't make it. No. I mean, there's no way.
But even if it does make it through the Senate, and it won't,
then the president vetoes.
The president says he's going to veto it because, again, we can't seem to figure this out. And this is why I keep coming back to how dysfunctional we are, because there was a moment where we almost had an immigration policy, wasn't there?
Yes. Oh, yes. And I can also tell you, I was in the room at the time when Bush put forth the beginnings, good beginnings, of a piece of legislation. And I could remember a member standing up, I can't remember who it was, in the back of the room, and he yelled, "Liberals, asylum," and he yelled it. The next thing you know, there's all this grumbling, and then the next thing you know, I don't know, Bush was to the left of the left of the left with people in the room. But he was trying, Andy Card was pushing his chief of staff, and he was trying to get something, and I think had the Republicans given him at least a listen, you know, he might have gotten something through the system. And like I said, now that, you know, the Senate will do nothing on this, if they did, like you said, the president will veto it, it's going to be still up to the executive with Title 42 as it goes away of what happens. I mean, we dealt with immigration before Title 42, and we'll deal with it after Title 42. But again, it'll be the executive, just like it was Clinton, just like it was Bush, Obama, you know, Trump, and now Biden. And the Congress, you're right, Rick, they could come. All they have to do, I mean, I make it sound so easy, but the principals have to sit at the table and agree two aspects are looked at. One, I won't say asylum, but, you know, Dreamers and, you know, benefiting people who have been here, even if they're illegal, blah, blah, blah. And then border security.
Yep.
That's what the Republicans look at. There's your discussion for the Republicans. If that happens, starting on that principle, Rick, they could get a bill.
Yeah, I'm not against border security. All in favor of it.
Sure.
I just know,
sure.
I know walls don't work. So we could build mm-hmm. all the wall you want. It's not going to work. I don't know if you've seen the videos on social media of the people climbing the wall.
Yesterday, I watched that video. I got to give them credit. Their traffic's going by.
Yep.
The guy, man, he just both feet up those rails. He's holding on to a rope ladder.
Yeah.
And he throws it up there. I'm like, wow. I mean, this guy, he was good.
No, there's a bunch of those videos. I mean, that's just one. Yeah. That's just the most recent. But, you know, you built right. it without a stop gap somewhere out between. Any decent pole climber is going to get over that.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, and I'm not against that. But, again, I know they don't work. What we need to be doing also is talking about how do we make places that are inhospitable for people to live more hospitable? Because the reason mm-hmm. people are walking 1,000 miles in the sand with no shoes on is because where they're coming from is a horrible, desperate place where they can't feed their kids.
Right. Yeah, multiple prong approach. And we do go through, you know, we go through the World Bank. We are, if people say, well, we don't need to be spending money, we already do. It's just probably a matter of trying to direct it in a better way for them.
But I go back to 2010 with the whole Tea Party movement. The big thing then was, we spent too much money on foreign aid, and they started gutting and cutting that stuff. And then, surprise, what happens? Desperation comes in. More people start coming here. Because I'll tell you, I'll be quite frank, if I'm in one of those situations, and I see, you know, I've got to take a walk to the U.S., I'm going to be walking to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of people in countries where you can only fly into the U.S. are actually flying to Mexico and trying to walk across.
Yeah. We got a lot to deal with. But, Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. Thanks for your expertise.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I mean, seriously, I mean, ask yourself that. If you were on the southern end of the border and you're looking into your children's eyes and knowing that they're hungry, are you not going to scale that wall? Are you not going to climb over the ladder or dig a hole underneath or hop onto the back of a truck or do any of the number of desperate things that go on? Look, we can't solve all the world's problems, but yeah, maybe not make them worse. That's where my mind is. How about we not make things worse? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. It was the first day of the Pullman strike. The strike started in the company town of Pullman on the south side of Chicago. George Pullman made his fortune making luxury sleeping cars for passenger trains. His cars revolutionized the rail industry, making long-distance travel a much more pleasant experience.
Pullman founded a model town for his employees. In 1893, an economic crash devastated the U.S. economy. Pullman egregiously lowered the pay of his workers by as much as a third. But he did not lower rents in the company town and did not decrease the dividends he paid to his stockholders. Outraged, the Pullman employees called for a strike. The strike was led by the American Railway Union and its leader, Eugene V. Debs. When the union held its convention in Chicago that June, the delegates voted to boycott any train that included a Pullman car. More than a quarter of a million railroad workers in 27 states and U.S. territories supported the boycott. Angry businessmen demanded that something be done. President Grover Cleveland promised intervention if any train carrying U.S. mail was halted by the boycott. Railroad owners quickly attached mail cars to as many trains as they could. President Cleveland declared, "If it takes every dollar in the U.S. Treasury and every soldier in the United States Army to deliver a postcard in Chicago, that postcard shall be delivered." Federal troops brutally crushed the strike. 30 people died and more were injured. A federal injunction was filed against Eugene Debs, and he went to jail for 6 months for refusing to stop his support of the boycott. The Pullman strike marked a new level of federal intervention against the cause of labor.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickfitzshow.com. Judge in Virginia yesterday declared unconstitutional a set of federal laws and regulations that would prohibit 18 to 20-year-olds from licensing a firearm, a handgun. So they have now ruled it's unconstitutional. You cannot stop 18-year-olds from buying a handgun. Even though what they're saying is they could just have their parents buy them for them. That's part of the argument. They're saying, nope, 18 to 20, you can have this. And I assume the AR is going to be the same thing when that comes. I do find it interesting that, I go back to Vivek Ramaswamy. Can't vote until you're 25, but you can buy a gun. You can buy a gun. And this is Florida. Understand it's Florida. Guy went to bed. He woke up, had a severe headache, head pounding. So he asked his wife to drive him to the hospital. Doctors found a bullet lodged behind his right ear. Evidently, according to the report, the nurse looked at the guy and says, "It appears as though you've been shot." And he's like, no way. Who would do that? His wife. his wife, she's been jailed on weapons violations while deputies are looking for other charges. Can't you just leave? This is the weird kind of place that we're in. And if you want to get even weirder, our Supreme Court ruled in favor of a transgender Guatemalan woman who is facing deportation because the reality is she's seeking asylum because guess what? She's a transgender woman. And the Supreme Court ruled she can stay. Because, yeah, you send this person back, she's going to face persecution back in Guatemala. So I do find it interesting that the court, and this unanimously, and that's the shocker, that people like Clarence Thomas and Judge Alito would vote that way. And they did. Good, I guess in this case, good on them because, asylum is supposed to be for those purposes. Now the question then becomes, is this going to be the new angle? Don't know. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you got any questions, comments, something on your mind, something I said got under your skin, by all means, angry, evil emails to the top of the list. If you missed any of the show, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you'll find ours. We're going to be taking Friday night off, a little break for the birthday. Back on Monday.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.